Hello, this is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
This is Jan Barry.
And this is Dean Torrance
of Jan and Dean.
It's Gwen Stefani. I hope you have a great holiday season.
This is Faith Hill.
This is Daryl Dragon, the captain.
And this is Tony Tennille, and you're listening to the Sounds of Christmas podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Kevin from the Tis the Soundtrack podcast is joining me to talk about a list I came across and, well, sort of. And I'll get to the sort of part in just a sec. Thanks for joining me, Kevin.
Thanks for having me.
I want to ask you about your podcast before we get to our lists and the sort of thing about it. Your podcast is called Tis the Soundtrack. What's it about?
Yeah, so I was having a hard time describing it to people, so I've settled on calling it the Accidental Podcast. I knew at the beginning of the year I wanted to do something to talk about Christmas music, and I wasn't sure what, and I wasn't even sure it was going to be a podcast at that point. So I started with YouTube and made a channel for it, and embarrassingly, my first couple posts, actually built them in PowerPoint, ran through them, did a voiceover, and punched it out to a recording and threw some videos up. Talking about the first one was the Disney's Christmas Favorites album, which was an important one in my childhood. And Jerry D from the Totally Rad Christmas podcast contacted me and he's like, hey, is this a new podcast? And up until that point, I had not even thought about it being a podcast. But, you know, if you've got a video with audio and you take the audio out, you, in essence, have a podcast. So
I
did a little research, talked to him and kind of went down that road. So been going since early this year. We try to put out a couple episodes a month, and most of the episodes kind of delve into obscure holiday soundtracks or just obscure holiday albums. And then we also spend a lot of time talking about music, not necessarily holiday music, but music used in holiday advertising and other little bits and pieces like that. One of my favorite ones is the holiday music loops they play in the different areas of the different Disney theme parks. So that's one of the types of topics we cover.
I really like the one, I think it's your most recent one, about Jeff Lynne and ELO, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody, so I won't say more than that, but...
Oh, thank you. That stemmed out of a hard choice of my family was just getting back from vacation, and Robert Plant and Alison Krauss were playing, and then like 2 days later, Jeff Lynne was playing, and I couldn't go to both of them and had to make a choice, and... Went with Robert Plant and Alison Krauss, and it was a fantastic concert, but was really licking my wounds that I didn't make it to go see ELO on their final tour, so I decided to do a podcast episode instead.
Yeah, that would be a tough call.
Yeah.
That would be a tough call. So what made you decide that you wanted to do a thing about Christmas music?
I'm a big Christmas music fan. I've loved it forever. I love it out of season. Like I mentioned on my podcast one time, we have a rule at my house. My wife, who spent years in her early career in retail, does not share the same opinion as me. And so I am limited. And inside the house, with the caveat that when she is present, Christmas music does not start until Thanksgiving morning. And I have a hard stop at the new year. And so I definitely get as much of it in as I can between then. But the rest of the year, I need some kind of outlet for it. And so this is how I ended up coming here, as I realized this is something I like talking about. I'm going to obey the rules of my house and keep a peaceable marriage. So I need some other kind of outlet for it and stumbled into a bunch of other like-minded enthusiasts. And that's kind of how this started.
To that end, I'm sure that's where the Stealth Christmas playlist came about.
Yeah, which the downside of that is she has now listened to the podcast and fully understands that and can call it out when songs are played from there. But Ken is referring to, the Stealth Music Playlist, is a collection of, and it's growing. Every time I talk about another one, we get to add more to it. But it's non-Christmas music that has been used in Christmas movies or advertisement. So if you recognize it, you might get that little hit of Christmas out of it. But to, you know, the average person, it just sounds like you're listening to music.
And I'll put a link to, well, I'll put a bunch of links in the show notes to, to your website, to your podcast, and to this playlist. I thought this was a great idea. I was listening to it earlier, and there were songs that I didn't know had been released.
Oh.
That you recognize a little piece of it. And you're like, oh, I know that. That's from that commercial. And
yep.
I didn't know Lily Allen had covered Somewhere Only We Know, but
yep.
There it is. Oh, I forget who the first one is. The version of Sweet Child of Mine.
Oh, yeah. That is one of my favorite songs. It's actually, spoiler alert, it's on my list of things to talk about today. But the Taken by Trees cover is just fantastic.
Yeah. And it's one of those that you're listening to it and you suddenly realize, I know all the words, but I don't think I've heard this song before. And then you realize what it is.
Yep. I totally get that.
So different. I don't know if this has started to happen to you since you're new in the podcast thing. I should take that back. I should ask you, is Tis the Soundtrack your first dip into the podcast pool?
Absolutely. This is, okay. Everything is new. Yep.
Okay. This happens to me quite a bit. I get a lot of Christmas related, Christmas music articles that people think, oh, you got to know about this. And they'll tag me on social media or they'll email it to me. And it happens year round. And one that has been making the rounds again, for some reason, is this one from Cosmo from last November. It's a list of, and what they say, is the 95 best Christmas movies of all time for an immediate dose of holiday spirit.
Yep.
I know that's really wordy, but best Christmas movies of all time. Okay. You've got my interest, and my Christmas critic is coming up to tell you that you're probably wrong about some of them. But but right under that headline is a smaller, I don't know, sub-headline. And it says, they'll make you feel like human tinsel. I don't want to overthink it, but I just don't feel like human tinsel is a compliment.
No, I completely missed that. But yeah, I think that's one you could dive deep in the tank and try to figure out exactly what it means to be human tinsel.
Yeah, I can't figure out a way to put a good spin on that. I go in and out of Christmas spirit all the time, but I never, even in December, even in the week of Christmas or on Christmas Day, I would never think, wow, I feel like human tinsel. No, I can't imagine it. So I couldn't help but being a little critical over this kind of article, even though I do get that we all observe and celebrate Christmas in our own ways, and what might make you feel all Christmassy might not have that effect on me. I remember this scene in the movie Deck the Halls where Matthew Broderick is talking about what Christmas was like as a kid, and he talks about sitting on the kitchen floor with his dad having French fries and chocolate milk. And that doesn't sound very Christmassy to me, but I get that that was, for that character, that was Christmassy. So I understand that we may not necessarily agree. I mean, there's the whole Die Hard thing, and I don't want to get into that. But this list that Cosmo had was very Netflix heavy, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Netflix has been putting out some pretty good Christmas movies, but the list also included plenty of non-Christmas movies, like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Mean Girls, Frozen, While You Were Sleeping, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Bridget Jones' Diary. I mean, these are all movies. Most of them have maybe a nice Christmas scene or two, though I think it would be hard to make that argument for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles since they were trying to get home for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
But since the article said it's the best Christmas movies of all time, I feel like that's a hard argument to make for Mean Girls.
Yeah.
And
they
had Christmas Vacation in there at number 47 and number 93.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. And it didn't make it very deep into editing either.
No. But with Christmas Vacation in there twice and some of the other things like the human tinsel thing and the descriptions underneath each of these movies, it made me think that if AI didn't write it, it had a hand in it, so to speak, because AI doesn't have any hands. But
so I was reading an article last weekend about AI cannibalism, which is the concept that as more and more of the content out in the world is AI derived, it becomes the sample set that AI uses. And so rather than getting more human-like, it gets more like whatever its own weird adaptation is. And when you sent me the link and I started rolling through those descriptions, that is the first thing I thought of is this is AI gone too far. It's in a loop at this point.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll put a link down in the show notes for this article as well, if you're morbidly curious or whatever.
Really, really bored on a Thursday or?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to check it out. It is attributed to three different writers, and they all have their own bios, and it shows stuff, other things that they have written. And I don't know. It just doesn't pass the smell test. But since you and I both do podcasts that are related to Christmas music, I thought it might be interesting, at least for us, to come up with our own picks for not the best Christmas movies of all time, but the top musical Christmas moments that make you feel Christmassy, that give you a bit of that Christmas magic. And since Cosmo's list didn't really stick to any particular guidelines, since there were TV specials in there besides the non-Christmas movies, I'm not going to insist on any real guidelines either. And while their list pretended to be all Christmas movies, we're just talking about those musical Christmas moments. And that could happen in a non-Christmas movie or a TV show or special or even in a commercial. And when I say that, and I hope I'm not stealing one of your picks, what immediately comes to mind for me is that Hershey's Kiss commercial where the little kisses are being used like they're bells and they play out, "We wish you a Merry Christmas." That one always gives me a little jolt of Christmas spirit and makes me want some chocolate too, but.
Which is
what they do.
Resisted the urge to use that one or the Campbell's Soup one where the kid comes in as the snowman and, you know, and it melts off. But both classics, and I think drive that Christmas spirit point home.
All right. Well, let's get to our lists, and we can go back and forth on these because I'm sure each of us will have something to say about the other picks. So I have 13. How many do you have?
I've got roughly the same amount. I think we'll be able to do the back and forth thing just fine.
Okay. Let's start like Casey Kasem would do at number 13 and keep going until we get to number one.
All right.
So what's on the bottom of your list?
All right. So I knew I wanted to pull something from the Muppets, and there's a lot to pull from between the Muppet Christmas Carol, the John Denver special, even the recent one that came out just a few years ago. So I went through and I picked the Muppet Christmas Carol, and I picked the second song in the One More Sleep Till Christmas. That one gets me every time. The setup is it's after Scrooge and Cratchit have had their exchange and he leaves, and it's Kermit is Bob Cratchit closing down the shop with all the rat Muppets that play the bookkeepers for the night. And so he's singing this sweet, sincere song about it being that last night, you know, when you close your eyes and wake up, it's going to be Christmas morning. And then the rats are just comic relief during the whole time. They're catapulting themselves at the windows to pull down the curtains. They're turning the potbelly stove into a sauna for each other. And that one just, that one gets me every time.
Yeah, that is nice. The one for me, I also went with the Muppets, but I went back a little bit further to Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. And my issue with that, by the way, is that it's a Christmas special that has no Christmas music in it at all.
Nope.
None of the songs are. But near the end, and I don't feel like it's a spoiler since it's over 40 years old, Emmett's mom and the guys in the jug band are walking home after losing out on the talent contest, and they sing the two songs that they each had performed and sort of put them together. And it's really sweet. And it just gives me the Christmas feels, which is pretty neat for a show that has no Christmas music in it. And then of course they get a job and they even have mashed potatoes there. So they're happy.
No, that's a great pick.
All right, what's next for you?
All right, this is where I stretch the rules a little bit, in that this is one that I don't think it would be a traditional Christmas feel, but I love it. And a couple of years ago, I showed the special to my kids, and so I knew what was coming, and they didn't. And so I also got to just enjoy them experiencing it for the first time. So this is Merry Christmas, Mr. Bean, from the Mr. Bean Christmas special. And this is the Away in a Manger scene. So the setup is Mr. Bean's getting ready for Christmas. It's Christmas Eve in his apartment, and he's got his stockings hung and everything. And he gets a knock at the door, and he opens his apartment door, and it's this children's choir, or set of children's carolers, and they're out and they're singing Away in a Manger. And so in typical Mr. Bean fashion, he runs back into his apartment, grabs his armchair, repositions it, pointing at the door, repositions both end tables. And he's got his sherry on one. He's got a box of chocolates on the other one. And he just sits down like 15 feet away from him in his living room and just watches him. And they keep singing, and they do it. And, you know, he goes through the motions, and he's starting to fall asleep in his armchair. So finally he gets up and he picks up his chocolates and he walks to the door, and you think you're going to get this sweet scene of him offering it to the children. And he just shuts the door in their face and puts the chocolates up for the night, and we cut to Christmas. And I love that. It's such a sweet moment. And then in typical Mr. Bean fashion, he just shuts it down. And, like I said, I knew it was coming watching my kids watch it for the first time, who, I've been a bad father, and I haven't exposed them that much to Mr. Bean. So the antics were new to them. And so it was just great for me all around.
I love Rowan Atkinson, and yes. I had thought about the Blackadder's Christmas special, but there's not really any music.
No, I looked at that one too. And then actually the reason I thought about the Mr. Bean special was there's the great scene at the beginning where he finds the pickpocket and, you know, gets him to turn over everything and gives it to the constable that's leading the choir, and he hands him his conducting stick. And so then you have Mr. Bean attempting to conduct God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, and he's, you know, conducting it like a radio where he's turning the volume up and down. And that one's great too, but I just like the manger one better, or the Away in a Manger one better.
Yeah, the carolers, that's terrific. My next one is a movie that's not really a Christmas movie. It's Serendipity, Kate Beckinsale, John Cusack. It's kind of bookend with Christmas scenes, but the majority of the whole movie is not. But the opening sequence, all these shots of Christmas in New York up against Louis Armstrong's Cool Yule, always, I can just watch those first few minutes, and I don't need to watch any more. I like the movie. I'm not saying anything bad about the movie, but if I just need a little jolt of Christmas spirit, I can watch that, and it's perfect. It's just a little slice, and sometimes that's all you need.
That's great. I'm trying hard to dig back. Is that the movie that centers around the pair of gloves he buys? Is that Serendipity? Yep. Okay, I got it. All right. Nope, that's great.
And the little shop that they go to that is called Serendipity, that's a real place, and I've been there, and the frozen hot chocolate is amazing.
Oh, that's fantastic. I would have never thought that was a real thing. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, what's next for you?
Got a few on here that are going to be probably pretty obvious. So this is The End of Scrooged with the Put a Little Love in Your Heart, the Annie Lennox and Al Green version. That's one of those movies my wife and I watch every year. And I just love the whole end of that. I love his epiphany, his manic monologue that goes through it. And then I was just thinking about this when I was writing my notes, and I'm sure it was very obvious and fully intended when they made the movie, but it just dawned on me that that scene and Bill Murray's character, it accomplishes what he was trying to do the whole movie with the spectacular he was putting on. You end up with, you know, the whole ensemble, everyone's singing, everyone's happy. I think towards the end of it, he breaks the fourth wall and tells everyone in the theater it's time to join in. And one of my favorite Christmas musical moments.
Yeah, I'm such a huge fan of that movie. I watch it many times during the season, during the rest of the year. It's one of those I can just put on and I can be doing other things, but there's so much music in it, and it's just such a good movie that I don't have to be, I've seen it enough times, I don't have to be completely following it along. I can be doing stuff and then I can look over and go, oh, That was the kid in Courtship of Eddie's Father, right? Okay. My next one is Polar Express. And the moment that gets me in that is when the boy that was in the back is looking out the back of the train and he starts singing When Christmas Comes to Town. And then the other two kids come back there and the girl joins him. And it's just, I don't know, there's just something about it. It's so sweet. And it's just, you know, I don't know if Christmas is going to work out for you either, but we're on this magic train and going to the North Pole. And it's all really kind of Christmassy.
Another great pick.
I do like the hot chocolate song, but again, that's not really Christmassy. That just makes me want to go get a cup of hot chocolate.
Yeah.
What's next on your list?
So this one, I had two that kind of fill this same spot. Again, in case you had one, I was trying to hedge my list here a little bit. So the one I had was it's a Charlie Brown Christmas, and it's right after Linus delivers his speech on what Christmas really is, and Charlie leaves with his little tree, and it's the Vince Guaraldi Trio's "Oh Christmas Tree" that plays as he, you know, walks out and, you know, is trying to come to terms with things and, you know, the commercialization of Christmas and that he's doing all right and his tree's all right. And this one, I think it's good on its own. I think it's a very good Christmas music scene. It's used well, but it's got a little bit of a personal meaning too. So try to not make this too long of a story, but I grew up just outside of Eugene, Oregon in a little farm town. And so we actually had a Christmas tree farm on the road my parents' house was on, just, you know, a quarter mile up the road. And that's where we went every year. It was Porter's Yuletide Trees. And so my childhood, you know, every year it was me and my brothers running through the rows of trees and, you know, pretending we were Ninja Turtles or whatever we were doing out there while my parents picked their tree. And so as an adult with my own family, kept up that tradition. We'd go out, you know, we don't live that far away. We'd go out there every year. And so the Porters were in their 80s, you know, when I was young. They got a little bit older than that. And when it was down to just Mrs. Porter, you know, she wasn't, you know, able to manicure the trees or keep them going or plant the new ones and was just kind of letting the farm grow out. But she still opened it up every Christmas and was in the little shed out by the parking lot, you know, making wreaths and doing her thing. And so for the last several years that they were there, we would hunt all over her property for a Christmas tree. And of course, they became a little scragglier and less Christmas tree looking each year. And by the end, I think we were cutting down seedlings that had just come up a few years prior from just fallen cones and stuff. But we'd always have the conversation in the car on the way back of, you know, this is a, you know, do we go buy a second tree? You know, we bought a tree from her, but do we go buy another one? And no, we're going to make this one work. And we'd get it home and we'd get the lights on it. We'd bust out the Rubbermaid tubs of Hallmark ornaments. And by the time we were done, I'd have my own, you know, little moment and, you know, do my own. I never thought it was such a bad little tree either, you know? And so for several years, we had our own little, you know, Charlie Brown tree there. So that's what I think of every time I see that scene and hear the Vince Guaraldi version of "Oh Christmas Tree."
Yeah, it's interesting. My family loves to get the trees that nobody else is going to pick.
Yeah,
I have always wanted to get a perfect Fraser fir, you know, beautiful, tall enough so it doesn't quite get to the ceiling, but big and full and perfect. And they are picking out the misshapen, scraggly, big bare spots, leaning, everything else you could think of. And it's always, you know, well, this is going to be a sad tree because nobody else is going to get it.
It needs a home too.
Yep. So the beautiful, perfect tree that I wanted is going to stay there because certainly somebody is going to pick that one.
Yep.
But the 4 foot tall, leaning, fat on the top, thin on the bottom, whatever, that one needs a home. Let's go give it a Merry Christmas every year. And with Charlie Brown, my wife said, you got to include at the end when they're singing Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and they all take a breath at the same time. And I said, that's, you know, it's cute and it's funny, but it doesn't have that effect on me.
Yeah.
I know it's coming and I always get a kick out of it, but it doesn't quite do that for me. My next one is from Elf, And this is near the end when Zooey Deschanel starts to sing Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And everybody joins in. And it's enough Christmas spirit to make Santa's sleigh fly. And that one always gets me every time. And I wouldn't think something from that movie would have that effect. I mean, it's a funny Christmas movie, and I enjoy it every year. But that one scene, for me, that always that always gives me the feels.
So I'll jump ahead for mine, because I also have Elf on my list, but not that song. And it was a real hard choice for me. Between her, you know, leading everyone to get the magic up in the sleigh, and the one I picked, which was Louis Prima's Pennies from Heaven, which is not a Christmas song, but I love the scene that it's used in, which is Buddy's just traveled from the North Pole, left it for the first time, and he comes out the Lincoln Tunnel staring into New York, and it's like the switch goes off. Because And the way I think of it is, it's the exact opposite of if you or I would go to the North Pole, right? If we'd go there, you know, we'd have Christmas overload. Everything is magic. You'd want to touch and taste and, you know, experience everything. And he sees that every day. He comes here and it's just a whole other world. And so he's running around, you know, looping through the revolving doors at the hotel and throwing up and then doing it again. And he's pulling all the gum off the subway entrances and eating it, and the accompaniment of Pennies from Heaven, you know, just song about it, you know, just, you know, raining down is just the perfect use there of him. Just, you know, he does, you know, everywhere he looks, there's just something new to experience. And I read a while ago, and this makes it even a little bit better for me. I read quite a while ago that whole scene that takes place during that song, they didn't use any extras for the movie during that. So every person he interacts with is just someone trying to get through their day in New York while Will Ferrell in an elf costume runs by and interacts with them. So there's the guys handing out flyers in front of the store and he keeps taking them. Yeah. And they finally just like get mad at him and shoo him off. And those were real workers out there. And there's the guy who he mistakes for Santa, who's in the red tracksuit crossing the crosswalk, and he runs up and says, "Santa," and, "Oh, nope, sorry." And that was just some guy that got accosted by an elf out, you know, for his morning jog. And I love that. Other thing I was going to mention about Elf, never noticed this on my first or second or probably my 10th watch, but the actual soundtrack to the movie is just loaded with like jazz and swing Christmas music. And I think I never thought about it, because the poignant parts are the one that you had where they all sing at the end, and the shower scene where they're singing, you know, "Baby It's Cold Outside," and, you know, those are kind of the things everyone remembers. But I mean, you've got Eartha Kitt and Ella Fitzgerald and Brian Setzer and, you know, multiple Leon Redbone tracks on there, and it's a solid album on its own.
Oh yeah, yeah, the music, and you have to really be paying attention to notice a lot of those songs in the movie, because they're just sort of,
yeah, there's so much action happening in the, yeah, yeah, in the foreground that they just kind of fall into the back. But yeah, great on its own if you're just you know, in the mood for some, you know, jazz Christmas music. Not a bad album to throw on.
My next one, I don't think this is really cheating. It's the movie's Jingle All the Way.
Okay.
And I loved this movie, especially because this was the first time Brian Setzer was getting into Christmas music. So I loved his music from it. That's not the moment for me, but I loved that he had all the cool music in there. The moment for me is when Arnold is just defeated, and yep, it's the afternoon of Christmas Eve, and he's out on the streets, and it's quiet, and he goes into that diner, and "Merry Christmas, Baby" by Charles Brown is playing on the jukebox. And there's just something about that, because that's my favorite time. When it gets later in the day on Christmas Eve and almost everybody is where they're going to go, or they're almost there, but the streets are empty, and it just has that peaceful quiet. And that just always gets me, and that this song is quietly playing in the background. You might not even notice it, but it's just the whole thing just really gets me. I mean, then Sinbad is in there and they and they run after it and and assault Martin Mull in the radio station. But but before that, when it's just sort of peaceful and calm and you've got that song playing, I just love that.
Oh, that's great too. And that's a movie that I probably haven't watched in a decade now. And I don't know why. It just just hasn't come up while we've been sitting at home. But so I'll have to make a mental note now to add that back to the list for this season.
One of the funny things about that movie, at least for me, is that I am a big watch the credits because there might be something at the end kind of guy. And I didn't do that with that one. And it was probably 10 years after that came out that I'm sure it was on HBO or something, and it was just going through the credits and I was listening to the music and doing something else. And then all of a sudden there's a scene where his wife says, "You did all this for him. I can't wait to see what you got for me." And you see the look on his face and you know, he forgot. Yep. He didn't get anything, but I didn't know that that was even there. And I'm guessing because said that, now there's going to be somebody who's listening to this going, "I didn't know that was there." Because usually, you know, when a Christmas movie, it's not a Marvel movie, so there's probably not anything at the end, but there was this time.
Yeah, and I can be honest and say I never saw that any of the times I've watched it, because same deal, you turn off the credits or you're watching it on TV and they cut through the credits halfway to, you know, skip to the next thing that's going on there. Right. And so the first time I saw that come up was on a YouTube clip years and years later. And it's like, oh, well, that's fun. That's a nice way to punch the end of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. What's next for you?
The next one on my list is a pair of commercials, that different songs, neither of them are Christmas songs, both Christmas commercials, but both have very, very similar themes. So, the one is the one we were kind of alluded to at the beginning. And it's John Lewis's 2009 holiday commercial, which they titled "The Feeling." And then it's the second one is the Half-It Hardware's 2019 commercial. So 10 years later, it's their "Be a Kid at Christmas." So I guess for folks that are unfamiliar with John Lewis, it's a big high-end retail department store chain in the UK. And I was struggling to describe it, or how I was going to describe it. So I asked the internet, and the best answer I got was like, it's like if Macy's ran a combo Target Best Buy. That's kind of a John Lewis. So I never been in one, but that seems fairly accurate from the pictures and everything I've seen. So in 2007, they started putting out a yearly holiday commercial. And the first one used some classical music. The second one was a Beatles cover done by employees from the store. They did "From Me to You." But starting with this one we're talking about in 2009, they started either commissioning or using a cover and doing like a high production commercial every year. And so in the UK, at least I'm told, it's a big deal every year when the new John Lewis commercial comes out. So this this first one of that style in 2009, it used the song, it used the Guns N' Roses song, "Sweet Child of Mine," but it's a very soft, almost spoken word cover by Taken by Trees, which is it's a woman named Victoria Bergsman. It's a solo project that she has. She was a Swedish indie pop singer, and she was also, I just learned, the female vocals on the Peter Bjorn and John song "Young Folks" a decade and a half ago or whatever. But the commercial is kids receiving gifts kids would not like, but adults would. So slippers, an espresso maker, ebook reader, and just getting super excited about it. And so, you know, it's showing your inner child and how excited it was, you know, with its, you know, with their favorite toy when you're opening this box of slippers. And so the "Oh, Sweet Child of Mine" works really well in that. And then the second one, very similar, Half-It Hardware, which I did a podcast episode on this and the music earlier this summer. They're the opposite of John Lewis. They're a tiny, tiny mom and pop hardware store in a little town called Rhyadr, Wales, or Rhyadr in Wales. And they did Christmas adverts for about 4 years, from 2017 through 2020. And it became, but the one I have on my list was the 2019 one, which blew up, and it's on lists of, you know, best Christmas commercials ever made. And it's similar. It's the grandson of the shop owners at the time, Tom. It's his 2-year-old son, Arthur, just going through his day as a shopkeeper. So he's getting up in the morning and eating his cereal and checking the news, and he's going in and stocking shelves and sweeping the floor. And he just goes through an entire day, selling, Christmas gifts to people. And then the commercial ends and he's outside and he goes to lift up a Christmas tree on his shoulder to take it home. And he, transforms back into his dad. So it's a very sweet commercial, but they commissioned a cover of the Alphaville Forever Young. So not the Dylan one, but the 80s Alphaville one. And the singer is Andrea Von Campen, who's like a U.S. folk singer, but beautiful song. Very similar emotion on the thing. Just really good. It feels so Christmassy, even though it's a song that's not a Christmas song at all.
The thing with the John Lewis commercials, for anybody in the U.S. who doesn't know about them, the people in the U.K., I mean, it's almost like they're Super Bowl commercials. That's the fever that gets up, and they start this time of year. There's lots of, you can go search John Lewis on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, and you will see there are people who are already talking about it, guessing what the song is going to be. It's really amazing. We don't have anything quite like that. Unless you talk about Super Bowl commercials. That's, I think, the closest thing. And it's not really the same, but it's that kind of fever about it. And it really is amazing.
Yeah, they will announce the release date of the new one. And it's generally in the same time frame every year. And everyone gets excited and people tune in or stream it as soon as it comes out. And usually whatever song is in it, it sends it right to the top of the UK charts, like just immediately. Very, very cool.
My next one, the movie is Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, I got one of these too.
The song is What's This? Either the first time you hear it or sometimes the second. The first one is certainly, it's when Jack lands in Christmastown and everything is very Christmassy. But the other one at the end is really sweet because Santa flies by and they wish him a Merry Christmas. He wishes them Happy Halloween. And then it starts to snow. Nobody knows what that is. And it's just, sometimes it's the first one, sometimes it's the last one. But one of those always, always gets me.
Yeah, I picked the same one, and for the exact same reasons. So the first What's This when he visits Christmastown, it's in my mind, that's kind of like a switch moment in the movie, because it's not the first song, it's the third or fourth song into the movie, but everything's, that kind of monochromatic Halloween town, and he's just, catapulted through the tree into Christmastown, and just that feeling that everything is new, right? That it's the snow, the lights, the cooking, the baking, the smells. I'd made a note on there. It's the, like the opposite of Elf when Buddy gets to New York, right? This is someone doing the other thing and going, similar to going to the North Pole. And every time I hear that, it reminds me of when I was a small kid, like early grade school, kindergarten age, and going into like the local shopping mall that first weekend after Thanksgiving, and everything has just been redecorated and everything is new. And you go into the JCPenney or the Emporium or Myron Frank or whatever. And, at least back then, they don't really do it so much anymore. But back then, I mean, a whole quarter of the store was decorated like a Christmas town you could walk through. And that is what that evokes in me. Like every time I hear that song, or at least the one in the first scene, the second one, like you said, is just a very sweet ending with the snow. But that first one, that's immediately what it reminds me of, is just being a kid and seeing like a Christmas spectacular for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there are lots of people have strong feelings about this movie. It's not a Christmas movie. It's a Halloween movie, whatever. I'm not trying to tell you what it is. I'm just saying that song just gets me, just gives me that little bit of Christmas magic.
I will, I'll share with you really quick. My wife has come around, but it's not her favorite movie by any stretch. And we were talking about it one day and she gave me, I've always considered it, this is someone who feels like they don't fit in and they're, you know, trying to find where they fit in. And then, you know, it's at the end, they realize, oh, they fit in all along. And, you know, everyone did like them. And, you know, and so that was always my take on it. And it made me feel good about it. And my wife's like, no, this is just a man failing up. He was the king of Halloween Town. He, you know, he had a puppet mayor there that did his bidding and kept everything in order. But really, he ran the whole place, decided that wasn't good enough for him. He was going to take over Christmas. That didn't work out right. And he just got reinstalled with the same job back. He's just failing right up that ladder. And so now that gets interjected every year when, you know, every time we watch it. So anyway, I figured I would share that for any other listeners out there.
My next one is Spirited. The Will Ferrell, Ryan Reynolds movie that I think it's an Apple TV exclusive.
Yep.
Near the beginning of the movie, Will Ferrell is the ghost of Christmas past. And near the beginning of the movie, they convert someone. They save someone, however you want to say it. And she has become a better person. And then they go back to their offices. Let me try this again, because just in case you haven't seen it, he's the ghost of Christmas past, and every year their group picks someone to redeem somebody. So somebody who is Scrooge-like in one way or another, and they pick someone to redeem, and they go through the three ghosts with them and everything. And they seem to have a pretty good batting average to saving people. And you get a glimpse of that at the beginning where they have reached this woman, and then they go back to their office and they sing this song, that Christmas morning feeling. And it is, their offices are huge, like almost like a Victorian library kind of thing, or what you would imagine that would have been like, except that it's modernized and there's computers and all that kind of stuff. But it's a giant song and dance kind of thing, very Broadway-esque. And it's just, there's just so much joy in it that it just feels good. And it just gives me that feeling. Have you seen this movie?
Yeah. A different song from it was actually on my honorable mentions down at the bottom if we needed to. But it's one of my kind of the surprise movies that caught me. It kind of like Elf was 20 years ago, right? I didn't think I would enjoy it that much and it would have this longevity, and I'd still be watching it 20 years later, and I kind of feel like that's what Spirited is going to be.
Yeah, I love the Christmas Carol story, mm-hmm. and that they tell you this is somehow connected. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but so I was looking forward to it. Will Ferrell in many of his movies has been kind of a goof, so I wasn't sure how that was going to go. I think Ryan Reynolds is pretty funny. So seeing the two of them together in a musical, I was very interested to see what it was going to be about. But I didn't have high expectations, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I thought that it was so much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I thought about using that one because that is, I think, the most touching song in the whole movie. But I went with Bring Back Christmas, and there's a personal reason for that too. So it is a new movie, so I'll try to explain this without giving away anything that's too integral to the plot. But it's Ryan Reynolds putting on a presentation for Christmas tree growers on marketing and how to boost sales. And it's a song and dance number also. It's very theatric, and basically the theme of it is, if you want to make money and you want to do better, you got to create an enemy and make sure your customers hate that enemy. And that enemy is people who buy artificial trees. And so there's a whole song and dance around it. And it's fun. It's fun in the same way like the Time Warp is fun, or the Little Shop of Horrors theme is fun. It gives me that same kind of vibe. But my kids, who haven't seen the movie, they have heard that song a lot for the last 2 years, because I think it came out in 2022. So it's been,
yeah,
2 years. So we always get a live tree every year, but a year or so ago, I added a artificial tree for my porch display so it can stay out there in the weather and do that. And so you see it right through our living room window. And so now my daughter, who was just 8 at the time last year, she would point to the tree and give a line from that song, which is, "Poor, lazy, deplorable Doug." who cares more about the convenience and happiness, more about his convenience and happiness than the respect of his town, of his country, of our sacred holiday. And so that every time I think of every time I hear the song now, that is what I think of, is my daughter monologuing about how I've turned my back on our country because of my artificial tree on the porch.
That's terrific. Yeah. Okay, so I think it's your turn now.
Okay.
Even though you just did that. That was sort of an extra bonus thing, right?
Yes, yeah, that was a bonus. So my next one is Green Book. So this is a movie from a few years ago, and it's not a Christmas movie, or I don't think, in my mind, it's a Christmas movie. It's more of a Christmas movie than half of the things on the Cosmo list, at least, because it takes place in the 8 weeks before Christmas, and it ends, you know, on Christmas Day. But I don't know that I've ever actually seen it show up on a list of Christmas movies. So we'll make it official today. Green Book Christmas movie.
Okay. But
it's the story of Dr. Shirley, which is Mahershala Ali as a piano player. It's based on a true story. And Viggo Mortensen is his chauffeur slash, you know, tough guy that's taking him around, and he's doing an 8 week tour of the southern United States. This takes place in the 60s, and he's hired Viggo, who is a bouncer at the Coca Cabana that's now closed until Christmas for remodeling and needs work. And so it's the story of them and dealing with you know, racism in the South and their relationship with the two of them going growing. But the movie ends, or very close to the end, it's a Christmas dinner scene. So Christmas Day at Tony Lip's house with his family. And so they're all sitting around the table in their apartment. They're, you know, talking with, you know, have four conversations going on with each other. And in the background is Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And so that plays throughout the whole scene while they're sitting there. And in this, Tony has just gotten back from his tour with Dr. Shirley. And they greet some people at the door, and then Dr. Shirley shows up. And so, you know, this is a black man in the 60s going to this Italian family's home for Christmas. And during that time, it moves from Frankie Valli to Nat King Cole's The Christmas Song. And it ends with just Viggo Mortensen's character, his family embracing Dr. Shirley and welcoming him in and getting him a seat. You know, there's a, I'm going to butcher it, but a, you know, they're like, you know, well, what are we all waiting for? You know, move over and get this man a seat, let him sit down. And it's just a really touching, sweet end of that movie, and just kind of punctuated by the Christmas music there.
Reminds me tangentially of the end of, near the end of A Christmas Carol, when Scrooge shows up at Fred's house.
Very similar, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a scene that always gets me, but there's not really music there. In any of the versions that I've seen that I can think of. So I couldn't use that. But that's that always, the Patrick Stewart version where he says, I'm an old man who doesn't want to be out in the cold any longer. That just gets me every time. But anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
I was just going to make the comment, also another soundtrack that has got some, not Christmas music, but just great songs on it. I'd read the director, Peter Farrelly, was working on this movie and actually was at dinner. His girlfriend, wife, I'm going to get that wrong, better half, is friends with Robert Plant's girlfriend at the time. And so the four of them were sitting together, and he was explaining this movie he was working on. And so Plant pulled out his phone and fired up YouTube and was giving him a tour of like 50s and 60s, just rare music, which he was loving because that's much cheaper to license when you're on a budget for making a film. And so you get some cool stuff on there. It's got the Al Casey combo. It's got a Timmy Shaw track. It's got Bobby Page and the Riff Raffs, just a cool soundtrack, plus all the reinterpretations of the actual Dr. Shirley music on there. So if that's something folks are interested in, a good one to look at too.
Well, I feel kind of silly going from that to Home Alone.
Oh, I knew it had to show up somewhere on the list.
Kevin's Fake Party, where he's having his Christmas party with the mannequins and everything else to fool or to try and fool the wet bandits. But there's just something about seeing the exterior of the house and all the Christmas lights are on and there's a party going on and Brenda Lee is rocking around the Christmas tree. There's just something about that that makes me want that house to be on my street. Yep. And that I can look out and see that at Christmas time. There's two scenes, though, that give me the feels from Home Alone. There's that one, and there's the scene where he goes into the church and the choir is practicing for the Christmas Eve service, and they're singing "Oh Holy Night." And that's just, it's one of those things where, again, it's like I hate to equate the church scene with Jingle All the Way, but it's like that scene where it's late on Christmas Eve and it's mostly quiet, and here's the choir is singing "Oh Holy Night," and it's so pretty, and it just is magical to me.
I was struggling with Home Alone because you've got that. You've got a few really good moments. You've got a score that's really good on that that movie too that you could pick from has some great scenes. But agree. Love the rocking around the Christmas tree scene when he's got everything rigged up on all the pulleys and everything. You know, got Michael Jordan and everyone else moving around in there. And Home Alone was probably one of the first not animated movies I ever got to go see as a youngish kid, and sharing a name with, you know, Kevin McAllister. That was a aspirational character for a couple years in my life that, I was sure if he could do it, I could protect our home and I could, keep the bandits away the same way.
I like that they also sort of gave new life to the Drifters' "White Christmas," which was a song that had sort of faded away. And I think he was doing the dishes or something.
Yeah, I was actually trying to remember, is that the shaving scene or the kitchen or the...
I think it was while he was doing a bunch of things in the house.
Yeah.
But that was a song that I remember I was working in a radio station in the late 80s, and I found the 45 in their big box of Christmas records. And I was the guy who was on for 18 hours on Christmas Day. So I played it and I'd never heard it before. And I thought, wow, this is great. We should play this more often. And then it showed up a few years later in that movie. And then it became kind of like a Christmas hit again. And now you hear it every year. And you hear people doing different versions of it, but that same arrangement. And I thought that was great. It didn't, when he's shaving and doing whatever else and that song is on, didn't really give me the feels, but it made me glad that they were breathing new life into the song.
Yeah, exact same thing. So, would have never heard that song before the movie, but it was rapidly on the heels of that movie. It was just in rotation on, I think all two or three of the radio stations we had in our local market that went Christmas, during the holidays, and it's just stayed ever since. And it's probably one of the most repeated versions of "White Christmas," out there, besides the really classic ones that you're going to bump into and hear.
So it's next on your list.
So talking about the quiet scene in the church and "Jingle All the Way," I've got a version of that too. And that's the movie within a movie. It's the "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas," the Judy Garland scene, but within the movie "The Family Stone." Is that one you've seen? Or
long time ago. It's not one I watch a lot.
No, same for me. It's, I think, like 20 years old at this point. But the setup for it is it's that taking the girlfriend back to, the family's house for Christmas. And so Dermot Mulroney is the main character, Everett, and Sarah Jessica Parker, this was about the time Sex and the City was ending, is his girlfriend, Meredith. And they're going back to their New England home. Diane Keaton's the mom. Craig T. Nelson's his dad. And it's got a big cast of other people at the time too. And so the scene is the Christmas Eve family dinner has just ended. And Sarah Jessica Parker's character, Meredith, has been clashing with the family since she got there. She's a businesswoman from New York and they're a laid back New England family and, all the cliche stuff that goes along with a movie like that. And she starts asking Everett's brother questions at the dinner table, and his brother is deaf. And his brother and his brother's partner are thinking about adopting a child. And she asks some very inappropriate questions that upsets the whole family, and kind of everyone's feeling bad about it and goes their separate ways and takes off. And so so that happens. And then the scene starts with the oldest daughter, which is played by Elizabeth Reeser. And she's on the phone with her husband, who's stuck in Chicago. And she's sitting on the couch at her parents' house, and she's watching Meet Me in St. Louis on the TV. And Craig T. Nelson comes in and says, "Hey, are you turning in soon?" And she goes, "Nope, it's my favorite part." And it's the part where Judy Garland sings "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." And it's the movie Merry Little Christmas was written for, to her daughter Tootsie in the movie. And in that scene within the movie, in Meet Me in St. Louis, the daughter is worried about moving to New York and, you know, taking her toys there, and will Santa find her there? And so she's singing her "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas." So that song plays, you know, from the movie within the movie. And it, as it goes around to the cast of everyone in the movie and what they're doing on Christmas Eve. And so it's very quiet, and, you know, they're out having a stroll, or they're, you know, in bed, and some of them are upset and some of them are reconciling. And it just felt like a very real, you know, Christmas moment. Like, you know, it's you've had those big family gatherings, and everyone's gets done for the day and kind of goes their own separate way. And, you know, you're maybe not all on the same emotional level when that happens. And it's just kind of everyone reconciling and, you know, dealing with their own, you know, struggles and what they're doing. And it plays through the entire song there. So that one's not maybe necessarily the happiest Christmas feeling, but a very real Christmas moment to me.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the original Judy Garland movie, it's a much more somber kind of song than Frank Sinatra juiced it up, and it's become a lot more joyful, but it's tough, very poignant.
Yeah, I think I don't remember if they got changed in editing for the movie, but I've seen a copy of the original lyrics, and I think the first part was, you know, "Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It may be our last," which is a much different tone than how it's been changed through the different renditions over time.
Yeah. Yeah. Going 180 degrees from that.
Yep.
The Preacher's Wife.
Oh.
Whitney Houston, Denzel Washington. She sings. She is the choir leader for her husband's church. And she sings "Joy to the World" with this massive choir, and I don't care who you are, that it's just amazing.
That's a great scene.
I know Aretha did the same arrangement. I don't know which one of them did it first, because they both came out in the early 90s, I think. But because we're talking about, no offense to Aretha, but we're talking about movies, so this scene, her singing this song in a packed church, and it's Christmas time, and it's just, it's wow. It's hard not to feel the Christmas spirit when you hear her sing that. It's just amazing.
Oh, that's another great one. And it's a big scene too. It's like very jubilant. It's all right. I've got, I think, two left. Am I counting right here? I think that's right.
No, I got four left, but I cheat.
Oh, okay.
So,
we'll turn directions completely again, and this is from The Year Without a Santa Claus, which is my favorite of the Rankin Bass movies, and it's the combo, the Heat Miser Snow Miser songs. So
I love that.
They're absurd. They're, again, incredibly show tuney. It works really good with Georgia Servin as the Heat Miser and Dick Shawn as the Snow Miser. Their voices, their, you know, just what they bring to that, it fits perfectly. So that one's been it's my favorite of the Rankin Bass movies. So that's been a favorite of mine for years. But about 10 years ago, Hallmark started putting out The Year Without a Santa Claus ornaments. And my family's got a tradition where my wife and I will pick out an ornament each year, and each of our kids pick out an ornament, and they get added to the collection. And this is one of those areas where she's indulged me, and our ornament every year is whatever the new The Year Without a Santa Claus ornament is. So except for one year, they've all been Heat Miser or Snow Miser or the Minions. And so I've got a growing collection now that adorn a good chunk of our Christmas tree every year. And so usually we're decorating the tree after I've watched the movie for the season. So now when I hear those songs too, I get excited because I know just around the corner is the tree decorating and we get to bring them all out again.
I loved it when I think it was Big Bad Voodoo Daddy did a cover of that on their Christmas album, late 90s, early 2000s, I think it was. And I don't know that I'd heard anybody cover it since the Rankin Bass special from the 70s. So it was magical to hear somebody else doing that song. There have been a few others who have done it since then, but yeah, that's my favorite Rankin Bass too.
And I was hoping that when they did the, it's been close to a decade ago now, but when they did the Miser Brothers holiday special, the, you know, in the early 2000s, they, whenever that was, I was hoping that meant we would get a new version of that song and they do sing the song in that one too. And it's a little different, but it's, it doesn't beat out the original and it's not like the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy's version or anything that's, you know, unique and wholly its own.
Yeah. Next for me, not really a Christmas movie, not at all a Christmas movie. When Harry Met Sally, there is a scene early on when they become friends in New York and it becomes Christmas time. And it's kind of like serendipity where you get all these shots of people are ice skating in Central Park and everywhere is decorated. And then it zooms down into Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal and she's trying to buy a Christmas tree and doing all of her, you know, all the, like the way she ordered food with something on the side and all this stuff while he's just standing there. And Ray Charles' Winter Wonderland is playing. Oh. And it's just the whole thing with all of, I just love Christmas in New York. Yep. And the whole thing is just really so neat. And it's only a minute and a half maybe, but it's just enough to just give me that little jolt.
Oh, that's great.
So what do you have next?
Was going through my list again. I guess I've got two. So this one was the throwaway one because I thought there was a good chance you might have it. So I didn't put a lot of thought into it. I just said, Christmas Vacation, pick one of the songs. And that was my note on there. So it's by far my most watched Christmas movie. You were talking about being able to turn a movie on in the background earlier. That is Christmas Vacation for me. It's, you know, played to death during the holiday seasons, and I'm perfectly okay with that. If it comes on and I'm channel surfing, I'll usually just stop right there and we'll just let it play out, you know, for, you know, it doesn't matter if there's 10 minutes left or an hour left, that's what's going to be on the TV. Oddly though, and I don't know what that says about me as a person, but it's the first two Pitch Perfect movies that are also in that pool. For whatever reason, if they're on TV, they just get stuck on in the background, and I don't exactly know what that says about my psyche, but it's for another day or another podcast to figure out. But I mean, the whole Mavis Staples intro there with the title song Christmas Vacation, which your wife Lisa does a fantastic version of too, that I found out recently with the kids choir and everything doing the chorus in the background, learned recently and was absolutely great. And it's not an often covered song either. There's not that many out there. But that, you know, the moon glows during the mall scene. Another Ray Charles, Spirit of Christmas, while he's in the attic watching the home movies. You can pick a whole bunch of them from those that all just give me that Christmas feeling.
That's actually my next one also, Christmas Vacation. A lot of the same thing. I had two scenes. I had the opening animation with Mavis Staples doing the title song, and Chevy Chase watching home movies in the attic with Ray Charles, that Spirit of Christmas. Both of those. And it is that kind of movie. It's our family's favorite, probably our family's favorite. And every time we find it anywhere, we leave it on till the end.
My son was almost 12 last Christmas. And so we let him watch it with us. And this was one of the, you know, I had that that scary moment as a parent where I love this thing and I'm showing it to you and please don't hate it and ruin it for me. And he loved it too. And so that, you know, last year was the first year I got to watch him watch it. And so now it's, you know, the countdown until we can let our youngest child see it and then we can all watch it together.
You know, When I married Lisa, she had two kids that also became my kids. And I thought about all the things I was going to get to share with them. And I remember there were a handful of movies that I couldn't wait to watch with them. And she said, I hope they like them. And it just stopped me in my tracks because I hadn't even considered that. How could they not like Monty Python and the Holy Grail? How could they not like that? Oh my God, what if they don't like it? Oh no, I should have found this out before I got here.
Yeah,
but you don't ever think about, I didn't think about what if they don't like one of my most favorite movies. Or worse, think it's stupid.
Yeah, I had that. I did experience that last year. So we do a family thing every October where you generally there's 4 weekends in October, minus the one around Halloween. And so we will each pick a Halloween themed movie. Although the last couple of years it's stretched into more like, you know, monster movies like King Kong versus Godzilla and stuff. But each of our family members gets to put down one we want, and it could be one that's a favorite of ours. Or something new we haven't seen yet. And then we also write down a dessert. And so all eight pieces, of, you know, the four movies, the four desserts each go in two hats, and we draw one out each week. And so that's the movie dessert we're going to have and the movie we're going to watch. And so 2 years ago, I picked The Dark Crystal as mine because it's, you know, kind of spooky and, you know, it's, you know, Muppety, and, you know, that ticks boxes for me. My family watched it. And all three, and my wife had never seen it either. And all three of them looked at me when we were done. And they're like, yeah, that was just weird, Dad. Didn't care. You know, it was your pick, so we're not going to say anything. But that was a painful hour and a half you put us through.
My wife, Lisa, had never seen It's a Wonderful Life till I came along. And she has a thing about black and white movies that she hates them. So I got her to watch it. And she was, and at some point she's like, how much longer is it? Okay. It's a Wonderful Life is a long movie.
Yeah.
It's a long movie by today's standards. I can't imagine when it came out, but, her reaction to it was, oh, it was really long and it was in black and white. And I thought, come on, this is one of the best Christmas movies. She's like, all right. It was the same thing. Never could have imagined there would be that kind of reaction. But
so that is one that I don't have that issue. That's actually my last one I have on my list. I don't know if maybe it's your next one too. Is It's a Wonderful Life?
Nope, it's not. One's not on my list.
All right. So that one. So it's the end of the movie. You know, George is now back in the normal world. He realizes how much his life has affected everyone else. He's, you know, doesn't want to die, and everyone in the town of Bedford Falls comes in to help him out with the missing money. And so the whole town launches into Hark the Herald Angels Sing, and his brother comes in and toasts him to the, you know, richest man in Bedford Falls, or the richest man in town. And then they all transition into Auld Lang Syne. And that gets me every time. That's, you know, one of the most Christmassy music scenes for me, you know, ever. And then luckily my wife loves that movie as much as I do, and so it's been our tradition for going on shoot probably almost 20 years now that every Christmas Eve it comes on a network channel, even though we can stream it or do whatever. So we've always put the network version on because that's what we had to do 20 years ago, and it ends at 11:30 p.m. And so It's a Wonderful Life will end. There's like a 30-minute intermission while the local news plays, and then Midnight Mass starts on TV after that. And we usually stay up and watch that also. And so that interlude between It's a Wonderful Life and Midnight Mass is where we do our holiday gift exchange with each other. So Christmas morning can be all, you know, about the kids and the family and everything else. And so, you know, we just, you know, wrap up watching, you know, one of our favorite Christmas movies, you know, one of my favorite movies. And, you know, and the whole theme of that is just, you know, appreciation and, you know, how much of an impact you have on people. And then we get to exchange gifts and share with each other, you know, how meaningful we are to each other and, you know, how much we impact each other. And so that's there was no way that wasn't going to be, you know, the number one on my list.
I almost hate to give, I have two left. And after you've said such terrific, wonderful things, I almost hate to give these, but number two on my list. So that was number one. That's all you have left, right?
I have that, and then I have. I'd be remiss if I didn't share. My daughter loaded me up with a rapid fire list of her favorite moments that I need to share.
Okay, I'll knock these two out, and then we'll go through her list. Number two on my list is Santa Claus the movie. The scene, one of the first scenes when the elves are making toys, and the song is Henry Mancini making toys, and there's just something about that music that just feels like Christmas to me.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge Henry Mancini fan. Know exactly the scene you're talking about. And yeah, it's that very magical Christmas sounding instrumental piece. And
yeah,
great one.
And number one, and my wife gave me a lot of grief over how can that be number one. But I have to say, this isn't necessarily my favorite Christmas movie, but there's a scene that just gives me such a feeling of the spirit of Christmas. The movie is Fred Claus.
Yep.
The scene is near the end. Fred has saved Christmas, and they go to the snow globe, and there are scenes flooding over, melting into one another of people and children all over the world on Christmas morning, exchanging gifts, opening gifts, hugging and loving each other. And it's just beautiful. And it's played against Sinead O'Connor singing Silent Night. And there is just, I really was surprised the first time I saw that movie that a Vince Vaughn comedy was going to have something that would give me such a wallop. But wow, that scene. I mean, I like the scene, the montage of him going around the world delivering presents to the waitresses, Christmas wrapping. Yep. But that scene with Sinead O'Connor singing, it's something special. And I'm not going to be embarrassed that I picked a song from Fred Claus to top the list.
No, you shouldn't be at all. So that's a movie I don't know that I actively avoided, but I just never watched for the longest time. And then it wasn't until maybe the year before last, we were flipping through Netflix or Hulu or something. We're like, I've never watched Fred Claus before. We'll throw that one on. And I went into it thinking, yeah, this will be good background music while I, you know, work on something for work on the laptop or something. And it wasn't too far in. Laptop got closed, got put on the table, and I just watched the movie and thoroughly enjoyed it. And great ending scene to close it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just something, I don't know, just something really special about the way they did that. So you said your daughter had a list.
Yeah, so I attempted to crowdsource this a little bit, and so I gave her the premise of what we were doing, and she was immensely jealous that I got to come on your podcast and talk to you, and she wasn't going to get to have the opportunity because I'm recording in my office at work, and she's at home today. So she sent me with her quick list of the ones that needed to be mentioned. So she had three. She had the Fred Astaire doing Santa Claus is Coming to Town from Santa Claus is Coming to Town at the end, which I had to look this up because I didn't know what to call his character. It's Postman S.D. Kluger. So if anyone wants that bit of trivia, it's for Special Delivery Kluger. Then from Rudolph, she had Burl Ives doing Silver and Gold was her next one on there. And then her last one, I had to look this up because I didn't know what she was talking about. And she said, it's the Dancing Santas at the end of the Santa Claus. And I will admit, I've watched the first Santa Claus movie a million times. I've probably seen the second or third one a handful. So I had no idea what she was talking about. So in between meetings today, I was frantically YouTubing to try to figure out what she meant by it. And it's the end of Santa Claus 2. And it's the scene where, or near the end of it, and it's the scene where the copy of him they made that went evil, it's outside with a bunch of the little animatronic dancing Santas, and it's kind of like yelling at them and talking to them, but it's doing Santa Claus Lane by Hilary Duff is the song they're all singing, or that's singing in the background while they're all dancing. And that was her number one pick. So Eden, your list has been delivered now.
Well, and thank you, Eden. That was great. Those were some good picks. Before we wrap it up, what is coming up? Anything that you can share without spoiling anything that's coming up on Tis the Soundtrack?
Sure. So we try to get out about 2 episodes a month. So I've got the next 2 written, one of them recorded, and going through the editing process. So the next one is another Disney holiday loop. And this one's going to be on the banjo-heavy holiday music of Frontierland out here at the West Coast Park in Disneyland, and the various iterations it's gone through over the years. And then the one I'm putting together after that will be for Target's 2005 holiday campaign, where they tapped Earth, Wind, and Fire to provide all the music for it. And so if anyone remembers back 2005, they did like a set of commercials that were all telling a story of a family or a group of people getting to a Christmas party. And each one was set to a different Earth, Wind, and Fire song. So it was probably when September 1st kind of came back and had a jolt about then. I remember getting a lot more just airplay after that Christmas season. But in there, a new song was recorded, Gather Round. And I think it was when I was researching for it, David Foster came back to help Earth, Wind, and Fire record the song Gather Round. And it was used for that. And they also used it for an NBC holiday special. And the only place you could get it for a decade was the Sounds of NBC CD that came out after that holiday special. And then about 10 years ago, Earth, Wind, and Fire put out a full holiday album and included the song on there. So it's now out and available, but it sat dormant for, you know, a decade or so, fairly inaccessible. So that's the one coming up after that. But I think I kind of explained it all here. So if you want to skip it and don't, you know, want to listen to it, that's fine too.
What's the best way for people to find you?
We're Tis the Soundtrack on Instagram and on Threads. Those are the two we're most active on. And then tisthesoundtrack.com has links to all the podcast episodes, or you can get them, you know, wherever you get your podcasts at. And then we try to put out a blog post for each episode, which is roughly the transcript of the episode, if you prefer to read information in that format, but also it tries to include any of the videos or the songs we reference right in line in there.
Okay. I'll put links for all that stuff down in the show notes. Kevin, this was a lot of fun. Thanks for giving up some time and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you so much for listening and helping me share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page, and I'll put a link to that down in the show notes too. So you can find us on your favorite streaming site, click on over, subscribe, and then you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. If you're listening to this episode on your phone, you can also click the Send Us a Text Message link and connect that way. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.